Hello, everyone. It's time to get started. Once again, I'll ask folks to silence their phones. I'm Karen Butler. I am the Vice President of Clinical Innovation Initiatives for Fresenius Medical Care, North America. And I am pleased to be your host this morning for this session. I am absolutely thrilled to be here with all of you, supporting the advancement of women leaders across our state and supporting this wonderful community. Fresenius Medical Care is a people business. Our success depends on having the best and the brightest employees and helping them to achieve both personal and professional growth so that they can deliver excellence in patient care and business results. Our Women's Employee Resource Group is testament to that. We are women helping women, and we are very proud partners of the Massachusetts Conference for Women. The conference offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Through a variety of programs today, we are committed to inspiring you to make your mark in and for your companies, your careers, and your communities. Thank you very much for participating in this session called Transition and Land Your It. We have an amazing hour in store for you, and it is my pleasure now to introduce Lisa Skeet Tatum. Lisa is founder and CEO of Land It, a technology platform that was created to increase the success and engagement of women in the workplace and to enable companies to attract, develop, and retain high-potential diverse talent. Land It helps experienced professionals, much like yourselves, draw up a playbook for their career, and it's specifically aimed at those who feel a little stuck, wanting a new challenge or wanting to excel in a current position, but don't know where to turn. Lisa is truly a community-spirited leader, as evidenced by her membership within the Kauffman Fellows Class 4, as a Henry Crown Fellow of the Aspen Institute, and as a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network. She's been featured in numerous business news sources, such as Forbes and Fortune magazines, and she was named one of the most impressive women entrepreneurs of 2016 by Inc. magazine. Land It was also named one of the top 10 innovations that made women's lives better in 2016 by Fast Company. Lisa earned her Bachelor of Science degree in Chemical Engineering from Cornell University and an MBA from the Harvard Business School. So please put your hands together and welcome Lisa Skeet Tatum.
Good morning. Man, my mom would have been really happy to hear those words. Sounded really good. So thrilled to be here. As Karen mentioned, they can't hear now. They're yelling at me.
How about now?
Oh, okay. Great. Man, you guys are an involved crowd. I like it. As Karen mentioned, Land It, our goal is to create a personalized playbook for each woman seeking to move her career forward, really looking at the millions of us, myself included, who will find ourselves at an inflection point, whether we're in a great company or we're just trying to figure out how to more successfully navigate. Maybe we're feeling stuck, which is where I was, and we don't know how to get out of it, or maybe we're looking for what's next. And realizing that as you progress in your career, the more challenging it becomes. So much so, as we sit here today, largest number of professional, educated women, not really firing on all cylinders, but we want to be. And on the other side, you have companies saying, gosh, I'd love to hire more women. I can't seem to find them, which they've been saying since I was 20 and I'm only 25. But more importantly, when I do get them, how do I invest in their retention development at scale? So we looked at that and said, it's really not a supply issue or demand issue. It really is a market failure. And so we can use technology to create a one-size-fits-one solution. Because when you think about it, for us, it's not a matter of track record or skill or motivation. It is that, where do I start? And how do I connect with the tools and the humans and the resources I need in a relevant way? So at Landit, I feel like I'm echoing. So at Landit, some of the things that we do is we say, you know what, we're going to find out about you. Because how can we be relevant? How can we recommend things if we don't know about you? And one of the mistakes that we see people make when they look at transitions is they just assume what I did before is what I'm going to do now. So we said, no, that's not sustainable if it doesn't fit with the 360 of you. So we find out about you, we recommend things, we help you build your board of advisors, or as my kids would say, your squad, because often we think about a mentor, it is not about a mentor, right? It's about who's your sponsor, who's your connector, who's your point expert. And then we help you build your brand, because it accounts for 30% of what it takes to be successful. If you're here, and there are people with less skills and less track record that are here, that's a brand gap. No question about it. That's a grand sponsorship gap. So we help you fill that gap. Or a coach. We have some amazing Landit coaches here. I didn't know we were going to be here today. I was, let's just say, well past 30 before I even knew that everyone I admired had a coach. And I'm like, well, shoot, how do I get one of those? Is that really the secret sauce? Imagine if you had one of those to path you forward. So those are some of the things that we do. I know a little bit about transition because I've been there, right? So I'm from Newark, New Jersey, right? Born in the middle of the riots. Chemical engineer, which gives me lots of street cred with my teenage boys. Started life, believe they still think I'm smart for now anyway. Started life off in engineering, then product development, ultimately running prestige fragrance business. Got recruited away to join a startup. I'm like, this is great. How do I do this for more people? Someone said, what about venture capital? I'm like, well, what is that? There's not a lot of VC in Newark going on, but yeah, that sounds good. They say you have to go back to business school. Harvard Business School was not on my radar, right? No one I knew went to Harvard Business School. So I was like, okay, yeah, if that's what it takes, I'll do it. So I applied and I got in. I turned to my husband, I said, what are you gonna do? He applied and he got in and we went together. And you get two for the price of two at HBS. And my very first day, I met my co-founder in Landit, Sheila Marcello, who's CEO of Care.com, because she was there with her husband. And we became fast friends. So I went off and I did VC, but then after about a decade, I found myself living a double life, where I had my VC by day, which I adored, but I have always been committed to creating access for others, which I was doing through board work, and I wanted to combine those two, and I got really stuck, because I had no idea what that looked like. Everyone expected me to know, and it felt really awful, because you don't want people to know that you don't have it all figured out, right? Because there's a social cost to admitting you don't have it figured out, because you don't get forward by admitting you're vulnerable, and you think you're the only one. And that's another mistake we do. We keep ourselves very isolated, right? And I said, my gosh, if it's hard for me and I have people pulling for me, it must seem insurmountable. So that's our goal, which is to give you what you need to move you forward. So I'm just going to set the stage before I invite our amazing panelists up on some of the things that we have noticed, myself included, I've done all these things, mistakes that we make that hold us back. So by default, don't do what I'm telling you that you do. So number one, we go into hiding. Right, so something happens, whether, heaven forbid, you were fired or something transitioned. Instead of staying visible, we retreat. Right, and when you're invisible, you're out of sight, out of mind. Number two, we forget about our brand. And I define brand as what do people say and think about you that makes them want you in the room. Right, makes them want you in the room. I have to have Lisa next to me. And just because you're in transition doesn't mean you throw away that brand. And don't you ever think that you don't have a brand, because brand happens to you. The question is, are you going to cultivate it or are you just going to accept it? Number three, we forget about the squad. So as I mentioned, we tend to think, oh, I need a mentor. You don't need a mentor, right? We're over-mentored or under-sponsored. You need a sponsor, someone who opens up the door, someone who's willing to spend their political and social capital on you. You have to cultivate those things. Number four, we don't rehearse. So a lot of people say to me, gosh, what do I say? What do I do when I'm not doing anything? And we stumble over it. Right, particularly if you're in transition, right? Or we describe ourselves looking backwards as opposed to looking forward, like your little LinkedIn at the top. It better be communicating what you're looking for, not your job description. And lastly, we define ourselves by the past. So some people say, oh, I was in marketing, that's all I can do. But actually, that's not all you can do. So you want to think about what is it that you want to do that propels you forward because you have the common skills. So that's just the world, according to Lisa Ski Tatum. But now I'm going to invite up our three amazing panelists, and we're going to take it from there. So come on up. Oh, by all means. I think we can move these forward. All righty. Love this. Okay, so We're going to start by having each of our amazing panelists just introduce themselves and where they are, and then we'll get right into the questions. So we'll start with you, Celeste.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Celeste Warren, and I am Vice President in Human Resources, and I also have responsibilities for our global diversity and inclusion organization at Merck. We're based in Kenilworth, New Jersey. Been there for 20 years. I have a husband, two teenage kids, and two, now three Great Danes.
Hi, I'm Gwen Wunderlich. I own a PR firm in New York City called Wunderlich Kaplan Communications. I started a program called the Internship to help women get back into the workforce about 2 years ago, and enjoying Boston. So, thanks.
Great. Good morning, everyone. I'm Priscilla Redmond. I work for Liberty Mutual in our Talent and Enterprise Services department, and I'm the Vice President and Manager of our Organizational Effectiveness Practice, our Strategic Project Management Office, and Strategy and Planning for our function. I have two young daughters, 4 and 7, and a dog that drives us slightly crazy. So a little bit about me.
Excellent. So, Priscilla, we're going to start with you. So you've had quite a few transitions over a short period of time. Tell us about what helped you make those decisions along the way and how you effectively managed through them. Some of your tips, your hacks.
Yeah, sure. So as I reflected about actually sitting on this panel today, I wasn't sure that I wanted to do it, actually. And that's because I went through so many transitions that I actually didn't know if I could sit up here in front of all of you and talk about them, because, you know, when you have so many things happen to you in a very short period of time, if anybody's been there, it can seem pretty overwhelming. And so I thought about it and was glad to hear Lisa's commentary this morning that it's so true that you have to step into it, you have to lean into it, and you have to remember your brand and be present. So a few of the things that I experienced, so I'm going to go deep right away here, in a very short period of time, my sister lost her ex-husband. I found out that my role was going to be changing a little bit at work. My husband decided to leave his job with my support, but maybe I would have made a different decision if I had known that all this other stuff was going to happen. And then the last thing that happened, which was deeply personal, is I went to Seattle for a business trip, and I was pregnant on the way out and not pregnant on the way back. And so it was just really difficult, any one of those things on their own, but all of them at once. I'm like, oh my gosh, am I like one of those, you know, comic strip characters with like a little cloud over my head? And so, you know, my husband and I had a lot of conversations about how do we get through this? It's a lot. And so our strategies were pretty simple, actually, one day at a time. Let's, you know, consider all options, meaning let's not say, decide right away, are we going to continue to try having children? You have to go back to work right away and maybe make some sacrifices. And then for me, you know, at work and thinking about what my next steps are and how I'm going to shape my team going forward, it was really about working with my team and remembering that I'm the leader of that team, and so I have to show up and actually help steer them through this change. So really it's one day at a time, remembering that, you know, you can add value even as you're experiencing all these changes. And by the way, I shared all of this with my team, and they were an amazing source of support. And so it's just really important to make yourself vulnerable, because people want to help you, and they can only help you if they actually know what's going on with you. So a lot of transitions, still working through many of them, but absolutely reach out to the networks and the communities around you. They really want to help you.
Thank you, Priscilla.
Sure.
Gwen,
yeah.
So you started internship. Tell us a little bit about that, and give us all hope for those of us.
okay. So I'll just tell you how it started. About 2 years ago, I started seeing on Facebook and social media a lot of my friends in the business, in the fashion business, beauty business, media business, losing their jobs, getting bought out, younger staff members coming, you know, up in their positions. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, how could this person, you know, they were just in the front row of Fashion Week, they're so major, you know, kind of get pushed out. And it was just something that was going on and on and on. And then a little bit later that year, it was my 40th birthday, and I found my first chin hair.
You're much older than I am, of course.
And I found my first gray hair, and I was like, oh my God, it's happening, I'm turning old. So I called my best friend to complain, like, I can't believe it's happening. And she's like, girl, listen, I'm potty training my daughter, I don't have time for this, I've been gray since I'm 22, I gotta go, click. And I was like, where's her compassion? So I saw that, and I was feeling a little bit down, but I did think to myself, thank God I have my own business. What if nobody wanted me anymore? Like, what if people wanted to push me out too? But thank God I've, like, made my own money since I'm 25, and okay, I got this, right? Telling myself that. A couple of days later, I saw the movie The Intern with Robert De Niro. And I don't know if you guys saw it, by Nancy Myers, but it was spectacular. But what it said to me was, like, wow, this older guy has all this experience, but nobody cares just because he's a little older. It seemed crazy to me. So if you saw, like, the great relationship him and Anne Hathaway had anyway, it was so inspiring. I ran into the office the next day, and I told my business partner, I was like, we got to do this. This is it. This is the moment. So we put it on Facebook just to kind of see, hey, what do you guys think? It got 1,000 shares, and the Huffington Post said, we love this. Can we do the exclusive? I said, shit, we better build a website, girl. So my business partner built a website. I wrote a press release. I was like, you think this is good? You think this is good? We sent it to a few of our mentors. Like, hey, you think this is going to work? They're like, go for it. We definitely have the just do it mentality of Nike. We're like, oh, let's put it out there and see what happens. And it's been a great success. And we've helped tons of women and hope to help hundreds, thousands, millions more if we're so blessed to do that.
I have to say, during my transition, I met so many women on the playground of my son's school who had done great things, and because they weren't doing anymore, all of a sudden they thought those skills were gone.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
Then there's, of course, the social shunning that happens that sometimes we're afraid to confront. So, mm-hmm. So true. It's like all of a sudden you didn't go from something to all of a sudden nothing just because you don't have a title or a position.
Yeah. Well, there's right? people that were like writers that could now be content creators, yeah. or if they were human resources before, like, I was like, I can help you. We can do this. We can just dust off this resume and show you how to use some social media and get you back in the game. So it was just really about finding value in them again for themselves.
Yes. Celeste, there's so many things I want to ask you. But why don't we start with, you've had definitely some times in your career where you have gone through some transitions, you've been frustrated. How did you work through some of those? What are some of your strategies?
Well, one in particular, which actually brought me to Merck from my previous company, I was in Florida at a facility, and I was the number two HR leader in the facility, and the number one, it was your classic, you know, number two story, where you're doing everything, you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off, you're making sure that everything is happening, that things are not falling through the cracks while your boss is leaving at 3 o'clock and coming in at 10 and that type of stuff. So I was just really feeling marginalized and frustrated. And we had an incident that was a crisis in the facility, and we had media, right, reporters outside the door. And when I went to talk to my boss at the time and the leader of the facility, both of them were out golfing. I'm not joking, it's a true story. And so reporters are at our gate, right? The enemy's at the gate. Nothing personal against any reporters might be in the room. And so I had to deal with the situation. And well, it was done well there at the local facility, but then they called the headquarter organization up north. And so that's when it kind of blew up. And when someone came down to the facility and they basically said, you know, well, what happened and where were you? Where were you? Where were you? And luckily I was the one that was able to say, I was there. I wasn't on the ninth hole. And I was, you know, talked through what we were able to do. So, but at the end of it, instead of feeling like, you know, the headquarters leadership team, they left. They made me feel good. But they left, and then it was retaliation time. And basically, you know, at the site, the leaders didn't like the fact that they felt that I ratted them out. And it's basically, no, you ratted yourself out. You weren't there during this crisis. So I felt marginalized. I felt very frustrated. And I had to do just some reflection and basically kind of said to myself, almost like our speaker this morning, asking myself the question, how am I valued in this organization? And how do I feel that I should be valued in this organization? So I did have to have that self-talk, and I did talk with colleagues and friends as well. And, you know, they basically kind of said, you know, why are you still there? Why are you putting up with this? And so luckily, you know, as you get older and you have family and children and mouths to feed and food to put on the table and clothes on the back, I was a single, you know, single income, no kids, sinky individual. And so I just basically kind of said, you know what, I've done the self-reflection. I value myself more than this. And so I left. And I didn't have a job. I just left. And basically took some time. I had saved some little nest egg away, and I took some time to just a couple, 2-3 months and for myself. And then got back in the headhunter started calling and ended up at Merck in back closer to home as well. So, but self-reflection for me, because I'm a big introvert, and talking and talking with very close colleagues and really just encouraging myself and getting friends to encourage me as well around that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, Priscilla, thank you again for being so authentic and vulnerable with your story, which so many of us are afraid to do. Talk to us about the importance of cultivating those relationships and the networks during that time, and as you said, making the ask, which so many of us are afraid to make the ask or raise our hand. So, talk to us about that.
So, I try to spend at least 20% of my time over the course of a year coaching people, and it's something that I love to do, and it's usually in the form of just grabbing coffee with people and letting them ask me anything. So if it's resume support or if it's a job that they're looking at internally, or even just to find out a little bit more about our team and what we're doing. And I take those meetings because it's just so important to offer myself, because I didn't have a mentor or a sponsor or a board of advisors or whatever the newest terminology is these days when I was coming up through the ranks. And I think I suffered a little bit as a result of that. And so I look at it as an opportunity to give back, not because I think I have anything amazing to say to anyone, but just, you know, if you're younger in your career or less tenured, there are questions that you have. And I actually kind of remember, even though it was a long time ago, I remember what it felt like to have those questions. And so I offer that to others. And then I also try to do the same for myself, meaning reaching out to people, whether it's inside Liberty or outside in other networks that I have from grad school or undergrad or community, whatever it is. And my my coaching around this to all of you is cultivate those networks every day on an ongoing basis. Because I think there's nothing worse than somebody coming to you when in the moment of need and you haven't seen them in 2 years and they're like, oh, hey, like, can you help me find a job? And it's just much more challenging to do that if you don't have that existing relationship. And so I think just making the time to actually cultivate those relationships, continuing to tap into your network so that when you do need them, they're there for you and they know what you've been up to. And as I said previously, they're just willing to help you. So, you know, just think about that and make the time for it, because often people will say, oh, I don't have the time to grab a coffee. You know, it takes 15 minutes to make that sort of time. And then actually Adam Grant, I saw him speak at the Texas Conference for Women, and he talked about the concept of 5-minute favors. And so has anybody heard about that concept? No. Well, he's here today, so you can go to one of his sessions maybe this afternoon. So I won't totally steal his thunder. But the concept is, you know, we're so mired in Outlook drives our life. So is it a 30-minute meeting or a 60-minute meeting? And his premise is, think of all the cool things that you could do in just 5 minutes, right? So you might be able to make a phone call or just ask somebody for a really quick favor, and it probably doesn't take more than 5 minutes. So I took that concept back to my team, and I said, you know, instead of having these office hours that seem like super formal and 30 minutes, just if you need something, just reach out, walk in, ask the question, and chances are it's not going to take more than 5 minutes. And so it sort of opened up that door for all of us to help each other in a different way. So hopefully that's sort of a practical tip you can take away.
Sure. Yeah. One of the things that when we talk about your board and your squad, because if you think about all of your connections, right, it's overwhelming. But if you just think about that inner circle, your dream team, and you keep the ask small, like what we say, a kiss of death is you go to someone and it's like, you know, will you be my mentor? No one on the planet wants that responsibility, right? And no one wants this, you know, can I come see you to hear about your life story? The answer is absolutely not. But if you come, come with a very specific ask, then the chances are you're going to get it. And if you come and stop asking for lunch and dinner, you better be changing my life if you want to have dinner with me, because that means I'm not doing something else. But if you ask me for a coffee, then I'm going to take that meeting. And as you said, don't be a greedy mentee, because nobody likes that, right? So it's got to be kind of give. It's never just coffee. So thank you for that. Sure. All right, so Gwen, what is the advice that you give to these amazing women on how to move forward? So it's one thing to say you have talent, et cetera, but sometimes we just need to know, what are the steps? What do we do? What's the advice?
Yeah, so nothing really can begin, or it doesn't matter if I tell you, oh, dust off your resume, get on social media, build you, the brand, if it doesn't start from confidence within, right? So it's easier said than done, right? But it's kind of like, even if you go in there and you like have to psych yourself up and it's a total lie, you're like, I got this. And you're like, Jim, I got this. I just ran, you know, $1 million campaign for the PTA. I pick 5 kids up from school every single day. You try that. You think I can't run this little firm? Whatever it is. I mean, when we taught the women at the internship, they came down so beaten down. And their story was, woe is me. I said, not for nothing, Phyllis. Who wants to sit next to you and hear that? I mean, really? Oh, my God, I don't have a job. I can't find a job. Shut up. No one cares, right? Like, ignite me so I want to help you, right? So start, like, if you have to lie to yourself, talk to your friend, pep yourself up, put on Beyonce, whatever you have to do, like, start to feel like you again. Like, there's a meme, I bring the table to the table. Like, you know, I'll bring the table. Wait, what is it? What do you bring to the table? I bring the table to the table. So, like, if you don't have to keep saying that to yourself, like, because you are great. Well, like, you had kids, you pushed it out. That's great, right? So, like, or you got married, or you, like, you know, or got divorced, or you buried your parents, or, like, whatever you did, all the things that you said you couldn't do, you did the hardest things of your life. So, like, getting a career change or getting a job, that's, like, it's easy stuff compared to the big stuff, right? So really just psych yourself up first. And find the things that you like to do. So, I mean, sometimes the jobs don't exist anymore for a certain age groups, right? You're like, but I did this my whole life. Well, that doesn't exist anymore, Karen. So figure out what does exist, you know? Like, so I really think there's a bunch of tips I can give you that you can find an Entrepreneur or Forbes or whatever, because who really cares? It's the same tips, right? Like, but what it really boils down to is building inner confidence and finding, like, your team, your squad, whatever, your song that does it for you, and change your mindset before you start anything else. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I would say.
One of the things that I love that you said is sometimes we discount what we do outside of, quote, work, right? So it's like, here's your resume, and then down here is, you know, I ran this, I did that, et cetera. So what we do is we give equal billing to your, quote, nonprofit volunteer work as well as your work, because it's the same skills, and they're transferable, as opposed to kind of pushing it down and making it less than.
Yeah, it really is, because if you're like, listen, the truth is I raised $15,000 for the PTA during this cookie sale, right? That's impressive, okay? You know how many cookies I'm pushing? You got to hustle? Like, you want to buy my cookies, Jen? You want to buy my cookies? That's a lot of work. I'm like, if you sold $15,000 of cookies, you get a job, you know? So, I mean, for me, when I get cover letters, I don't want to see, oh, I went to this business school. Personally, I don't care. For me, I'm like, who do you know? What did you make happen? You started a blog? Cool. You got 15,000 people on Instagram? Oh, you did this amazing thing? Great. Because I want to see the inner entrepreneur in people. Mm-hmm. Because I want to be able to trust you that, hey, if I want to dip out and go play golf or go on vacation, I can trust you to run my business and handle it, because you are a solid-minded person with entrepreneur attitude. So I think that in this day and age, people are looking for inner entrepreneurs to run and help run their business. For sure. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Last thing, I think you had mentioned before about, am I really about to have a senior moment?
Yeah.
about the importance of the consistency of your brand, wherever you are. Because if I think about all the boards I've been invited to sit on, they never came through my work. It always came through something I did in my community. Or my first landed customer was because the dad in a group that my sons are in liked the way I ran the Olympics. And he's like, if you can run the Olympics, then you would have a great company. And who knew? So that consistency of brand and how you show up is really important.
Yeah. Lisa, absolutely. Can I build on just the confidence thing? So somebody shared a stat with me the other day that said, if a woman looks at a job description, she may look at it and say, I only, you know, I've got maybe like a certain percentage of what they're looking for, and unless I have 90% of what they're looking for, then I'm not going to go for it. A guy will look at that same job description, and if he sees he's got 30 to 40% of what they're looking for, he's going to go for it. And so there's very real statistics and experiences out there where women are less considered for their potential and more judged against their performance. And so to the extent that you can dig deep, find that confidence, look for transferable skills, and also just get your own legs up, if you will, right, from a potential perspective and speak to that and not just hang your hat on your performance, because skill sets are changing so quickly, right? It's like every 5 to 7 years you have to think about reinventing yourself. So when you think about that in the context of a career, that means that it almost doesn't matter what you did 20 years ago because it's obsolete, right? But what can you take away and what's potentially transferable? Think about that. But the potential thing is so huge, especially across gender lines. So we already have a leg down. So how can you kind of lift yourself up through that?
So Celeste, you talk very authentically about the impact where you have a great career, but you also have a family. Mm-hmm. And just some of the choices you make, how you run things, how you get clarity, et cetera, and then the role that your partner plays. Yes. So speak to us about that.
Well, my daughter is 16 and my son is 14. And when I was pregnant...
And 14 too. We should talk.
When I had my daughter... before I had my daughter, I was your type A, get stuff done, results oriented, typical professional. And so I had this huge just change in my life, you know, and my focus and my everything. And people that I worked with back then, they said, "Oh, we're all in the same, competing for the same jobs." And they were like, "Oh, we're so glad Celeste had a baby because now she's going to slow down." and I'll get some of those projects and things like that. And so what I found was my daughter made a very profound change in my life, my first child. And I say to my husband, it's like, you know, honey, I love you. We got married. That was great. But, you know, it wasn't profound from the standpoint of my career. but my daughter, having a child really was very profound. And I found myself when I came back came back to work, that I became very laser focused. And what I mean by that was I was going to be, the way I looked at people occupying my time from 9 to 5 was, you better come correct. You better come with all cylinders, you know, flowing, because I don't have time to waste, because I need to get home to my daughter. Mm-hmm. That was my mindset when I first came back. And so it actually helped me to be more efficient at work. I will say I made the mistake of, you talk about the 5 minutes, and the, mm-hmm. I did make the mistake of not focusing more on relationships in the workplace, because my focus was really intent on home. And my husband, I laugh at stay-at-home dad, because he, at that time, when we were getting married and we were going for a walk, and walking around, and I had some surgery the year before, and we were walking around, and he said, "You know, as we get married, I think I want to stop working." So I'm a black woman, so, you know. "You want to what?" I'm sorry, say that again? You put the ring on my finger, and now you want to say, "Oh, I don't think so." But then we talked about it, and he said, "Look," he said, "you make 10 times more money than I do." He grew up in a household where his mom was working, his dad was just totally dysfunctional, and it was just a horrible childhood. And so he said, "You know, I really want one of us to be home." And he said, "By the look on your face, I guess it's not going to be you." But he just, you know, logically said, "I want one of us to be home. And what do you think about it?" And so we talked about it. I thought about it, because I was from a very traditional family. And so I literally, I said, "Look, I got to talk, you know, I was 30-something years old when I got married that time." And I said, "I got to go home and talk to my mom and dad about this, because I, you know, we're talking about going down the aisle and you don't have a job. My dad's got to, be on board with that. And so I went home and I actually did go home and talk to my parents. But my husband and I, it was very interesting the way you're perceived. So him as a male staying at home back then, so this is 16 years ago, and then me as a woman who... in the neighborhood, with the childcare facilities, with the school, with the nurses, how they perceive me. And so it was very, very challenging. But the partnership works, and it works to this day. In fact, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when the kids got into high school, he said, okay, well, I'm going to go back to work. And I'm like, what? Wait a minute, we had a good thing going here, But it's a partnership. It is truly a partnership, and how women perceive you in the workplace was very interesting, and not just women and men, because it was, well, your husband's at home, you can stay late, and you can do this, and you can do that. And it's like, no. I'm putting 100% in for the time that I'm here, and even get home, feed the kids. Do whatever I need to do, and then after they're in bed, and then you might get online or do something. But I did not like the fact that I didn't want people taking advantage of me because my husband was at home. And I found also that as I went on in my career, I found more women who their husbands were at home, and we sort of formed a bond and a network.
Thank you. That partnership is key. Some of you may know my husband is the deputy commissioner of the NBA, and I always say, okay, you have more flexibility because you have 1,000 people working for you. I have 7. So when we need to do something, it's going to be you.
But so we just said we need some tickets.
Yeah. Get online.
You're so covered. So you mentioned one of the mistakes that you made as you were looking at transition, et cetera, was not keeping up with your network. What are some of the mistakes that you've made in transition that you would recommend we don't make? Because you've turned off.
Me?
I'm looking at you.
Oh, okay. Can you answer the question?
A mistake that you've made in one of your transitions that you...
So many.
I got a long list myself.
Yes.
But what would be one of the don'ts that you would share with the group when you're thinking about a transition or you're going through a transition or you've just made a transition?
I would say don't stay in your own mind so much, right? So, stop being like, well, I was in human resource for 10 years, but I was a secretary for this year, but this is all I know how to do. It's like, forget it. Before, obviously, when I even started in business, there was no internet. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't know the possibilities of what I could be or what I could do. So I think that people use fear, which is fake, to say, well, I can't do this. So I think staying in your own head and talking yourself into that you can only do this when, it's infinite. You can be anything, you can do anything. And really, sometimes it just takes one conversation, one hey, I really am thinking about transitioning into writing from, being a gym teacher. What do you think about that? And someone's like, well, actually, I need writers. So I think staying in your own head and kind of diminishing yourself and all the amazing things you can do is a big no-no. And we don't do it on purpose, obviously, but again, put that Beyonce song on for sure.
Priscilla, mistake that you've made that you would tell us not to do or do differently.
So likewise, my list is fairly long, so you can learn from me.
I think you're talking about personal mistakes. So I was we don't have time for all that.
So I would say for transitions or things that happen to you in the workplace, try not to take it personally. And I know that that's easier said than done because when if your job changes or if you get moved around within an organization, whatever it is, or if you lose your job, it's hard not to think, oh, did I do something wrong? Did I not perform? Am I not adding value anymore? And so I would say don't do any of that because more often than not, it has nothing to do with you personally as an individual. It's typically a business decision. And so sort of the quicker that you can get over that, if you will, the faster that you can move on to, all right, so what do you need to do differently and how can you create your own path forward? And the other would be to not let others define your experience. And so what I mean by that is, when things happen to you, whether, again, internal or external to the workplace, it's really easy for other people to project their own experience onto whatever it is that you might be going through. And so try to own your own experience for yourself and don't let others, you know, sort of define what that looks like for you or make you feel sad or beat up in the process. You know, I got a note a couple days ago from a colleague, and she was just like, oh my gosh, like, are you doing okay? And I'm like, I'm A-okay, you know? But I could have taken on her, and I know that she was reaching out to be nice, but the way I took that was, don't feel sorry for me. You know, I am completely fine. We're going to get through all this stuff, right? And I actually bumped into one of my friends from business school in the speaker lounge this morning, and I'm probably going to totally screw this up, but she said that her grandmother had a saying that in odd years, things don't go your way, and then in even years, everything evens out. So she's like, it's 2017, it's almost over. And I'm like, thank God, because I just can't take anymore. So 2018 is right around the corner, so if you've had a year like mine, right, maybe kind of hang your hat on Jody's grandmother's saying, which she's here and she's speaking today as well.
Cool.
So,
nice.
Yeah.
So the number one thing, thank you, the number one thing that I see that we don't do when we think about either in transition or making transition is defining and taking risk, right? It's really easy for people to say take risk. What the heck does that mean, right? So you think about kind of three circles, right? So you have kind of the inner circle where most of us tend to live. No magic, nothing happens there. No sponsor is going to see you. No one's going to spend their political capital on someone who stays in that safe bubble, right? So then you go one circle out, right? That's where it's uncomfortable. If you're feeling comfortable, you're in the wrong place, right? So you think about how do you stretch yourself, but not so much that when you're in the outer circle, which is the terror zone, right? You don't want to live out there, right? But you do want to raise your hand, and you must be visible, and you have to stay on task. And so Carla Harris, who some of you may know, she's a managing partner at Morgan Stanley, and she says, always take the risk if you can ask yourself or answer yes to the following questions. One is, will it open up a new branch on my tree of opportunity, right? So if it's going to open up more things, then yes. Two, am I going to meet people that I wouldn't have otherwise? And then am I going to learn something, right? And if you can answer three to all those, even if you don't have the confidence, you must take the leap, right? You must take the leap. When I was a VC in my dark, dark days, you know, I would have, you know, men, and I love men, by the way, the men in the room, would come in and they'd be selling me the moon, right? Lisa, you know, give me this and I'm going to go here. And then I'd have women come in much more qualified, but they would tell me how they're going to pace, right? And I don't want to invest in pace, right? I don't want to invest in mediocrity. Sell me the moon. So when you think about taking risks, when you think about identifying yourself, you got to operate outside of that inner circle and to the next one. Okay, I'm off my pedestal now. Okay. Where is Karen? Where'd you go? Okay. So I think we may have one other moment. So back to very specific advice, because I think we want people to walk away. If you could give just one piece of advice, do this one thing, what would it be?
I like the fact that it's a little bit, I think what you said, don't sell yourself short. Take that leap of faith. Build the confidence in yourself, but don't sell yourself short. We all have things that we can offer. No matter what it is, we all are valuable. And don't let anyone tell you that you're not.
I think mine would be go big or go home. It's like, you know, like, go for that conversation. Say it, mean it, do it, try, go for it. And, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, like, it's not going to happen, so what? Like, then the next thing will happen. So, you know, go big or go home for sure.
Yeah, and mine would be to approach change or transition with a growth mindset. And so what I mean by that is you can't go back, unless you guys have figured out how to go back in time. I haven't figured out how to do that. So you can't control what's happened to you. And so how can you look at whatever's in front of you as an opportunity to learn, to redefine yourself, to reframe, whether it's your career, your path forward, et cetera. So think about having a growth mindset and not get too hung up on the things that have already happened, because you can't change it.
And if you take a risk and you fail, what do you guys think you should do? What's the first or second thing that you should do after you've done that?
Well, first thing is you go home, get in the bed, do it like I do, cry for a little bit. But then you get up. The next day you get up and you go back out. You go to work. You learn from those mistakes, because you're just bound to repeat them if you don't. But realistically, the first thing I did, I go home and I literally crawl in a ball and cry in my room by myself. And then I start back the next day and I say, okay, what could I be doing differently and how do I need to approach it? so I can learn from what I did.
I call my friends and bash anybody who doubted me. I'd be like, can you believe them? But then after...
I love her.
After my friend's like, no, girl, you're right. It was all them. Not your fault at all. I know that they just love me. And when I, you know, then I like crawl into bed with the dogs and I'm like, damn, I really must have messed that one up. Or like, what did I do? But I definitely self-reflect. I'm a big self-reflector. Kind of recalculate, refix, and say, how are we going to do this again the right way? So
mine's probably kind of a mashup of those things. I like to cry my tears into a big vat of wine. So that helps.
With wine, too.
With wine. Sure. And then, you know, kind of back to having that network. I've got group texts that are sort of ongoing with just girlfriends that I've had for over 20 years. And so they're my go-to, okay, I effed this up, right? Like, help me stand myself back up. And then, you know, I don't think that failure is a bad thing. So it's like, feel your feelings. I think that's really important, and have that experience of feeling bad or whatever it is that you want to feel. But then do that get up part of it too. And if you have that growth mindset, then you can look at the situation and figure out what can you do differently the next time. So again, it's thinking about looking at it as a learning opportunity and not getting too hung up on, you know, whatever it was that didn't work out in your favor.
Got it. Okay, one last question before I turn it over to Karen. What do you think is the most important skill or muscle that we need to develop when you think about transition, reinventing yourself, you know, constant change? What would be that one skill that you would say someone should focus on? Mm-hmm. We'll go that way and go back down.
Yeah, sure. So I would say resilience. And resilience is something that we're all, you know, born with to some degree, meaning obviously as human beings we've been able to survive many things over the years, but it's also a muscle that you can learn to develop. And it's almost like taking everything that you've heard today and thinking about how can you look at every situation as an opportunity to make yourself stronger. And also, you know, back to my statement earlier, feeling like a cartoon character with a cloud over my head, it's recognizing that you're not alone and you're not the first person to whom whatever the thing has happened to. And so there are other people who have probably shared in that experience. Find those people, go talk to them, and find ways to build your own resilience. It's only going to make you that much stronger the next time that you have a downfall, because none of us are perfect. And so, you know, it's sort of like you have to expect that things aren't going to be perfect, and so it's more about what are your strategies for handling it.
Can you ask the question again?
The one skill that you think is, or give me two, that you think is important when someone's thinking about making a transition, especially in these days where things just such a velocity to change, what's that skill that someone should hone?
I think research. So a lot of people are like, we're so busy, I don't know, I'll just stay with what I know because I don't know what else because I didn't take the time to research, right? So instead of watching Grey's Anatomy, instead of looking at cat videos on YouTube, right, do some research and be like, you know, what else is out there? What educational programs could I jump into? Is it a weekend seminar? Is it a one-day mentorship program? There's plenty of programs like ours where we accept people, whether they're women for 6 weeks at a time to shadow us, or we do one-day intensives that are free or very low cost that you can get in, because I think there's something to be said by walking in the door feeling one way and walking out, you know, through research and re-educating yourself. You know, you don't have time to go to college anymore. I mean, if you do, God bless you, that's amazing. But, you know, I was looking at, this woman was saying, oh, come to Harvard. Like, look, you can come 7 weeks. I was like, 7 weeks? I don't have time for all that. You know what I mean? Like, I got a one day. I got one day for you. But, like, I'm a big researcher, right? So so research, and then master the art of reinvention, right? So, like, look at Puffy. Look at Jay-Z. Look at anybody, right? Like, how they master, like, the constant art every single day of changing things around. I mean, Mike Vick, I mean, you name it. There are so many people that one day you could be like, you know, Jennifer, who got booted out because she, you know, screwed up and she's a big sap and whatever, and then put some red lipstick on 3 days later and be like, you know what? It's JenniferGotThis.com. You know, like, I'm out here, whatever. And every single day is another chance to reinvent yourself, not 5 to 7 days. It's every single day. So, like, mastering that. Yeah.
I would say the skill of curiosity, same thing that she was saying. You should... If you want to do something, research it, look at what capabilities are needed, what you already do that is transferable to that, but just the skill of curiosity and also innovation, creativity. Everyone likes how you can be innovative and creative and bring something different to to the table, the proverbial table.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing I will say, and then I really will turn over to Karen, is it's not so much a skill as I want everyone to develop this habit. If I do nothing else on the planet, I'm going to get everyone to do this, which is to keep track of your accomplishments on a weekly basis. Because when you think about advocating for yourself, doing your research, what are you valued, no one on this planet is going to keep track of what you do. So when you need that confidence, when you need to go and advocate or negotiate for yourself, you don't want to be looking at pieces of paper. You want to have a list and make sure that you're not spending a disproportionate amount of your time on housekeeping projects that don't matter. Right. So the only way you can keep a check on that is if you get in the habit of keeping track of your accomplishments. So now I'm going to turn over to the real expert, for Karen.
Thank you. Well, first of all, please join me in thanking these amazing women for their insights and their expertise. Excellent. Lovely. Thank you very, very much. We'd like to give you all an opportunity to ask questions of our panelists. So if you have a question, please come to one of the microphones in either of the aisles, and we will entertain your questions and continue the discussion for probably about 8 more minutes. And while we're waiting for questions, I actually have one that I could ask you all. And Gwen, you alluded to it earlier. You talked a little bit about fear.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, fear is probably, if not the foremost, one of the foremost drivers for preventing people from moving forward.
Right.
So could you all offer up, because of the fact that change is hard and fear can be so immobilizing, could you offer up a strategy or two that would help us to begin to overcome fear in transitions?
I can, but I don't think I will. And I'll say that because, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, and I'm sorry, I just want to take a little time to tell this story because it's important to me. But so yesterday someone posted on my Facebook page, wow, you're so awesome. I wish I could live your life. And I felt annoyed by that because I was like, would you, could you, should you really? If you knew what I had been through to get to where I'm at today, and I'm still not like A-okay, right? We're all still like, oh, it's a bumpy road here. But when I started my business at 25, a month later, 9/11 happened. 3 months later, my mother died. 3 months after that, my grandmother died. 4 months after that, my grandfather died, and my father came down with walking pneumonia. I mean, pneumonia that he was on his deathbed. Thank God he's alive and safe now. So many other things happened that year and happened throughout the year. So I say that to say is that that year, all the sum of all fears came to me, right? It was everything that was the worst that could ever happen to me. And I'm still standing, and I'm still alive, and I'm still pushing forward. Thank God, like, I got up. But from that, that taught me there's nothing I can't do, nothing I can't say, nothing I can't get over. If I could get over my mom dying, like, I got this. You want to fire me? I don't care. I'll go get another client. It doesn't matter because the worst has happened. So yesterday, me and my girl here, we posted by that fearless girl statue. I'm sure you guys did too. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, I'm not fearless. I'm not. That's okay because what would drive me every single day if I was completely fearless? And then today with Viola Davis, which, I mean, come on, right? I mean, the speech, but, you know, what she was saying is embrace the fear. And I was just like, you know what? Yes, girl, I am. And we all should, because if you're not scared and if you're not, like, fearful a little bit, like, where's the chase? Like, where's the satisfaction in, like, pushing through? You know, when I got my divorce this year, I was at SoulCycle on Thanksgiving morning, and I started crying at the end. And I was like, I'm so proud of myself. I got this. I came through. I'm a little bruised, but woohoo! You know, but I was so fearful for so long to even leave my husband because it's scary, right? Oh my God, I'm going to be 40 divorced. But yeah, I kind of love fear, man. It's like, ignites me.
Yeah.
Okay. Let embrace it. Let it ignite me.
Thank you. So we'll start
Can
on
I
this
just
side.
Make one, just one
yes,
comment about
absolutely.
Fear.
Absolutely.
In a world that is built for extroverts, if you are an introvert or ambivert, you had better get yourself a sponsor, because that sponsor, when you are afraid or when you're not able to speak up, et cetera, can actually amplify your brand and be your advocate. So that's one way that you can get around that and also become almost like a magnet for your own success. Like, things that we fail, you can remember that right off the top of your head, but things that you do so well, maybe not. So you have to build that mental library of courage, if you will.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll start here. Please tell us who you are and where you're from.
My name is Maria Egan, and I work at a wealth management firm, Reinders McVeigh Capital Management. And my question is, what's your advice for women that have shifting roles as you're getting older and moving into new positions, and how to deal with kind of interpersonal relationships and expectations of people for former roles, and then like as you're trying to prioritize your new responsibilities?
Expectations of people of you?
Of some of your old work.
Oh. I had a job where my counterpart left, and my boss, instead of hiring someone for her job, said, "You do both." And I immediately became ill, completely ill. And I had to broker relationships. So I met with each of the, I just call them stakeholders that I needed to meet with, that I knew I needed help, because I didn't know her job that well. And I first met with people to help me. And I said, I didn't come across like, I got this job, this big job now. But I need your help. I'm not going to be successful unless we're all in this together. And so it was the contracting. And then the second thing was, I laid out a 90-day plan that basically said, what do I need to accomplish in order to get this on the tracks and get it going to where it needed to go. And that helped immensely. Helped me to sleep, too.
Thank you. And it sounds like you may need to think about maybe refreshing your brand, because what people think you have and what you contribute and maybe what you're morphing to may not be the same, and you can rebrand yourself. So think about what are now those three things that are now more valued in that new position, and what are the three things that authentically you have as strengths, and there had better be some intersection, and then you focus on that and you just blast the crap out of that when you think about branding yourself.
Yes.
Hi. Name is Heather McDonald. I work for EF Education. They're based here out of Cambridge. So my question is, and you just mentioned this about getting a sponsor. So I think probably a lot of us in this room are extroverts, and we like to talk and socialize, and I'm one of those people, but I don't consider myself someone who can kind of be an entrepreneur and just create something. So how do you go about getting a sponsor if you're not quite sure, you know, where to start and like what track you should be on? So what would be your recommendation for those of us that feel a passion for something but don't know what that next step is?
So the question is, how do you attract a sponsor?
Yes, yeah.
So I like to use the analogy why I live in Princeton, why you don't go to Whole Foods looking crazy, because you never know who you're going to run into. So you have to always be kind of sponsor ready. So it starts by, people have to know your accomplishments, right? Because you're asking people to spend political capital. That's what a sponsor does, right? And then what I tell people is ask for the interview. So don't go again and say, will you tell your life story? If there's someone that you admire, and it's got to be someone in power, right? If there's someone that you admire, go and ask for very specific things that you need help on, because it gives them a chance to see some fire in you. It doesn't necessarily has to be entrepreneur, but something that's worth investing in you, and then you got to follow up. You got to follow up, you got to cultivate, as you mentioned, you got to follow up and nurture. And know, just because someone is in power doesn't mean they're good for you, right? There's got to be a fit, because you can't force it. But it is, you must be visible, and then you have to go make the interview, and I'd be happy, or make the ask, and I'll be happy to talk to you afterwards as well.
Great, thanks.
Oh, that's great. Okay. We have about two more minutes, so we'll take one question, and then I'm sure these folks will stick around afterwards to entertain other questions.
Hi, thanks so much for appearing on the panel, and thank you for all of your advice. It's been great. My name is Veronica Page, and I've transitioned a whole lot of times in my life. I started in tech, and I've gone into like user experience design. I'm also taking on massage school right now. So my question is, what is your advice for a person who's trying to quit the career ladder path and go into entrepreneurship?
I can take that. Yeah. a couple years ago, somebody would have laughed when you said, I was a tech, I want to be a massage, right? But like, the thing is, it really is the time that when you speak to most people, it's not entrepreneur anymore. What do you call it? Like tripreneur or whatever. I'll make up that word. That's fine. Like when people do like three or four different things, and what an interesting person that makes you, right? And by the fact that you want to do massage, you're either like making people feel good, helping experience touch, whatever. So you're doing user experience. You're giving somebody your personal experience touch. just find one little or two words to bridge the gap in between to make it all sound like in unison. Be like, I help people have a, you know, I use my hand for their experience. P.S. I'm also a whatever, you know, whatever you're doing, even if it's five different things, find one or two sentences to bridge it to tell people first. Because the thing is that when you say, I want to be an entrepreneur, but say, I do this, it sounds like jack of all trades, master of nothing, right? But once it all flows and you deliver that one sentence to somebody and they're like, I get it, cool. So now you have your thing that you are, right? Now you want to be an entrepreneur. You know, for me, I quit my job at 25 because I got a $10,000 check and I was like, oh, I'm rich. Yeah, right. I didn't have it. That's like a week later. But my point is definitely have some money. Definitely be prepared not to make so much money, but you know, if you're living in your truth and you're happy with it, like, whatever, you know, can you eat out a couple of days less a week? But we can talk more of it on a person-to-person level and come hang out with you after. Yeah.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you all for joining us today. And let's give our panelists one more round of applause.